And now he's the force that drives Japanese whaling, Mark Maron.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I think that hummingbird is under my shelf. I'm going to find it. We're going to, Bill and I are going to go to record something in the garage, and it's going to fall out of the earphones.
No, that hummingbird is out flying around.
I like your optimism. Happy. See, this is what you have in place of a belief in God, is this strange belief that the hummingbird that can't fly out of my garage, whose wing was broken and jumped out of the bowl off the napkin bed I built it, and somehow it magically went through the wall.
Wing was broken?
Something was broken.
Oh, it's dead.
Hey, that's the gym I know.
Somebody, some rats, lucky rats having a nice meal right now.
A giant spider, perhaps.
Spider rat.
Now we're talking. Hey, Paul Tompkins is a stand-up comedian. He was a writer and performer on HBO's Mr. Show with Bob and Dave. He has appeared on Real Time with Bill Maher, Late Night with Conan O'Brien. He was in a sitcom once upon a time.
Oh, yeah.
Called DAG with is David Allen Greer.
Wait. Hold for the applause.
Okay. Oh, thank you. He was on the Tenacious D series on HBO and his own one-person thing on that very same network. Mm-hmm. Someone said they saw you on Keith Olbermann the other night.
I was just on there. Was that last night? I think it was last night.
Was it last night? Did they call
no,
you?
No, it was 2 nights ago.
I'm going to finish the intro. He hosts his own monthly variety show cabaret thing here in L.A. at the very cool Largo nightclub where he cads it up with the likes of Amy Mann, Jack Black, Fiona Apple. When's the next show? June 26th?
June 26th. That's
June 26th.
Right.
And you do a radio show thing because we had somebody else from that on here.
A radio show? Oh, yes, I do. Padgett Brewster.
Padgett Brewster was here.
Once a month, my friend Ben Acker's show that's like a fake sort of live radio show that we do at the M-Bar.
Okay, let me finish the intro. So right now, in our very own studio, Paul F. Tompkins.
Thanks,
Paul,
everybody.
Hold for the applause. Yeah, that's great. You. That's tremendous. That is the first time he's ever done that.
Oh.
And we've been on the air 22 years.
That's
first
right.
time.
Time
first,
flies.
Very first.
Thank you very
much.
So,
Paul, what the hell, man? What the hell? So you were talking on MSNBC about our friend Daryl Hannah, who we called in the tree the night before.
Yeah, yeah.
And
did you call her in the tree?
We talked to her from the tree.
How is she doing?
She was in the cornfield when we talked to her, hosing herself down. I'm not kidding. I'm talking to Daryl Hannah. She's doing a protest. And somehow or another, we're talking about the South L.A. farm, mm-hmm. which is, I think, a valuable cause and a mm-hmm. real thing.
Absolutely.
And she says, well, I'm out here in the cornfield. I have a tent set up. I just hosed myself down. And I had to really fight myself. Well, good that you're doing what you have to do out there to hold strong.
Yeah.
What'd you say about her, you mean bastard?
I said nothing but nice things. I said that because it was posited that why couldn't they just shoot her with a dart to get her down out of that tree?
I
said, you don't want to do that with a Daryl Hannah because it's not sporting. Right. You want to give her a chance because if she gets shot with a dart, she falls out the wrong way, she might break her neck, and then you have to crush her skull with a rock.
Oh!
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's humane. It's humane.
So I should have killed the hummingbird that I found that hit the window?
Well, that's a tough thing, man. A hummingbird with a broken wing, because those wings do a lot of work. A lot of work, exactly.
Yeah.
And if the one, I don't think he can get along with just the one.
Well, no, but the question is, I saw this thing hit the window. I mm-hmm. feed these things. I have an entire community. They call me dad. In my head, they do.
Sure.
And it hit the window, and it fell on the front stoop, and I mm-hmm. picked it up, and I did what you do when you're seven. You make it a bed, and you put it in a bowl or a shoebox, and you put it someplace where the cats won't eat it, and you watch it die.
Right. Yes, exactly. Have you tried putting it in a jar with some grass?
That's the wrong animal.
That was always my method.
With the bird?
No, anything. Anything that makes its way into the house. You put it in a jar with some grass. Take a screwdriver, punch some holes in the lid.
Watch it die. Yeah. That was it was a very old Lewis Black joke he used to do about the hamsters. I can't remember what it was about goldfish and hamsters. They're just things you buy your kid to teach it what death is.
it's pretty much true.
So what have you been doing? What's been going on?
Well, you know, I just quit smoking.
Congratulations.
After almost 20, it was 19 years and one month, and I quit smoking.
Best thing you'll ever do in your life.
I can't, but it's like being in love.
Yeah.
I can't, like every time I think about it, I get excited.
It's invigorating.
Yeah.
And it's what people don't realize when they do smoke, because I've blathered on about being a non-smoker mm-hmm. before, and people who listen sometimes are like, some of us aren't there yet, why don't you shut it? is literally within 2 days you feel results. You're like, holy crap.
Yeah.
I can breathe again.
I'm on my second full day, I think. I'm on my
second just 2 days?
Yeah. 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 And I rode my bike today, and it was like, I realized at some point I would have been a lot more out of breath at this point normally than I have.
How much did you smoke?
I averaged a pack a day.
Yeah.
I average a pack a day.
But on drinking night?
Oh, two. Boy, oh, boy. Yeah, I could get it up to two.
Yeah. And then, you know, when you wake up after drinking and you have that stink? Well, I don't do
so
that
bad.
Anymore. You know,
so
coming
bad.
Out of your lungs and your skin.
Yeah.
And that weird ache in your chest that somehow as a smoker you're able to dismiss somehow.
Oh, yeah.
With
a
cigarette.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Literally, they're. I used to picture them bleeding some sort of black, bloody goo. And that's why I couldn't take a full breath. But you'd be like, I'm going to smoke and eat some eggs. That'll make this better.
Oh, well, see, I didn't smoke until after breakfast.
Come on, never?
Oh, no. That wasn't civilized.
Oh, dude, sitting down with like really strong coffee and about six cigarettes?
Well, see, that's the thing. I would eat first, then I would have my coffee, and I'd have the cigarettes with the coffee, and I was in heaven. And then...
You needed a nap.
And then I needed a nap. Absolutely. I was exhausted from so much pleasure. From so much pure enjoyment.
Well, I used to think it was because, like, if you drink, like, a triple espresso and then smoke, like, six cigarettes, literally your body's like, and it has to, like, release.
Yeah.
Well, it took me about 15 years to quit. Like, I was just talking to you off the air. Like, I remember I smoked since I was 14 years old because it was essential, and I loved it.
Absolutely.
I loved smoking.
Absolutely.
But the first time I tried to quit, I was 19. Like, I knew then. So I think, I think, honestly, in the back of my head, I've tried to quit on and off since I was about 25, and it took me till I was about 36 to actually get it done.
I think that's a lot of people's experience, though, because it is, you do realize fairly early on, like, this is not good, you know.
Yeah.
It's after you smoke because you want to look cool, and I started when I was 17 because I started doing stand up. Then I was in this world of the coolest people in the world.
Yeah,
you know? Stand up comedians. Who's cooler?
Right, until you're in it about 5 years.
Yeah.
And you're like, my God, you're just doing this so you can evade the tax collector.
Exactly.
You should be in jail.
Yeah, a lot of them are now. I think a lot of the guys
that were
established guys when I started out are probably either no longer with us or they're serving time.
What was the first time?
At our president's pleasure.
Yeah. What was the first time you realized that the road guy you were working with was not a good person, and these were not the best people in the world?
It took me a while, and then it was shattering. It was shattering when I realized that. Well, first of all, when you realize somebody is a hack, that is like finding out there's no Santa Claus.
Yeah.
When you realize, I thought this guy was so funny, but there's 80 guys doing the same bit same way. And
that hurts a little.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
How could that be?
This is going to be different than I thought
it would be. Yeah, I mean, who thought of it originally? That's the weird thing. The difference between someone who's a thief and a hack.
Yeah.
A hack is just doing something you've heard.
Yeah.
A thief
is
actually worse because he's doing that guy's joke.
Yeah.
But hacks do things where you're like, you don't even know where that started.
Yeah. I've been doing this for about 20 years, and I'm almost ready to excuse the thief more than I am the hack. You know?
Really? Right.
Like, at least the thief has got some balls, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just going to take this material.
Yeah. He aspires to great things.
Yeah.
At least he'll take people who did great work.
Yes, he knows what good material is.
There you go. But I remember when things started to diminish, where you started really realizing that there were certain people in the business only because they had no choice. I knew a guy who's dead now. Who literally could not stay in one place because he was afraid he'd be arrested. He didn't like his name to be in the paper because he thought the tax people would find him.
Was it Ollie Joe Prater?
No. I was just going to say that.
Here's Prater Aid.
You could usually find him at the Comedy Store with gout and a cane. It was actually Frankie Bastille.
No, really?
Yeah.
Frankie was afraid of the law? He was a fugitive?
He had done jail time.
Wow.
You know, he had the Tibetan Book of the Dead tattooed around his arm. Yeah. What's some road wisdom, dude? Was there any, like, moments with, like, old-timers where they were trying to lay down some stuff with you?
Oh, man. I mean, you know what? I just thought about that the other day, that I'm glad I've reached a point in my career where I don't have to listen to unsolicited advice anymore. And there was so much of that for a long time, and it was like some hacky dude trying to tell you could learn something from this other hacky dude.
Yeah.
You know, like, take a look at this guy, because you'll pick up a few things. Like, no, I don't want to be like you too.
Yeah.
That's the last thing I want. I don't know what it is yet, but I know this is not it.
it's so tricky about the road, because I know you're a guy, and I'm the same way, where I paid a lot of my dues as an opener in Boston doing one-nighters.
Mm-hmm.
I was a middle for a very short time, and then I went to San Francisco and I started headlining.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't do a lot of, you know, week-long road gigs. I'm not that guy, because I do this, I've done other things.
Absolutely.
And I think it's very touchy, because so few people survive the road mm-hmm. with a personality that is actually original.
Yeah.
There's something about the road that just beats it out of them.
It's the survival instinct. It's you have to go to town after town, night after night, and you have to do well if you want to be asked back. You have to have a good show, and you have to sell the drinks and all that stuff, or your work will dry up. You know, the people that run these clubs have to know that you're going to deliver. So it's sort of like, a friend of mine put it that you are letting 100 people a night tell you how to do your job. Night after night, and there's no way around it. I mean, I admire anybody who, like, comes up from that with any kind of, like, a guy like Hicks, that he did the road and still had a very singular personality. Like,
but
that's
the weird
amazing.
Thing is, but the interesting thing about Hicks is that he was actually the conscience of club owners. Was mm-hmm. that it wasn't, they didn't care how he did. By having him at their clubs,
right.
they could justify that they're like, hey, we got Hicks here twice a year.
We care about comedy.
Yeah, and he walks people and sometimes right. people get shot in the parking lot, but we have him here. Yeah, exactly. He was... all right, so now we're running out of time. So what can we plug? You want to plug something?
Paul F. Tompkins Show, if you live in the Los Angeles area, or if you feel like getting on a plane, come down to Largo, the June 26th, last Monday of every month.
And paulftompkins.com. Yeah?
Yeah. See if I updated it ever.
All right. Thanks for coming on the show, man.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We'll be back with Johnny K Street.